You are listening to The Game Plan on the official Raiders Podcast Network. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
It's The Game Plan Podcast on the Raiders Podcasting Network. Welcome, I'm your host, JT. The Raiders get set to take on the Seattle Seahawks this Sunday in London at Wembley Stadium. Raiders coming off a critical loss to the Chargers last Sunday in Carson, California. Final score was 26-10. The first time this year that the Raiders were not in the game. They did not play well, and we haven't been able to talk about the Raiders with a lead in the second half and an opportunity to win the game. Seattle coming off a really good football game and a tough loss to the Los Angeles Rams at home by a score of 33-31. So the Seahawks played well, but they couldn't put it away. The Raiders played their worst game of the year, and they're going to have to rally if they're going to turn this season around with a win against Seattle in London. Couple things to get to here as we open up this podcast. We got A-list guest again, the great John Clayton, one of the best NFL minds of the last few decades, will join us as he launches Clayton NFL, his new business venture. One of the great wide receivers ever, Fred Biletnikoff, Raider legend and Hall of Famer, and the great sports talk host, the best in all of Seattle from KJR, Dave Softy Mahler, on the Seahawks and where they stand so far this year. The Seahawks are 2-3, second in the NFC West, but again, coming off a really tough loss in a game that they could have won. Going back to Carson, California, disappointing performance for John Gruden, Derek Carr, and the Silver and Black because they were never in the game. Everything that we talked about last week on the podcast, which could be problems, were problems for the Silver and Black. Tackling, field position, interceptions, giving up big plays. Phillip Rivers threw for 339 yards. He was 22 of 27. And they had big plays in that game of 49, 44, and 34 yards. You can't win if you're going to give up big plays like that and not tackle well. Now, in the game for the Silver and Black, they started two rookie tackles in Colton Miller and Brandon Parker. John Feliciano was in for Kelechi Osemele. So that offensive line was not at their best, even though the young rookies really put up a great fight. Daryl Worley returned and had eight tackles for the Silver and Black at cornerback, and that is something to build on. But it was a game, once again, where the Raiders had turnovers. They're minus four on the year in turnover margin. And, you know, four or five of their big plays this year happened in one game when it came to turnovers in a positive light against the Cleveland Browns. So we got to see more consistency from the Raiders on the defensive side. They got to be faster. They got to tackle better, and they can't give up the big play. That was the key to the loss to the Los Angeles Chargers. And for Derek Carr, Derek Carr is going through a tough stretch. He's fifth overall in passing yards, so he's throwing the ball, and he's putting up yards, but he's first in the league with interceptions with eight. And he's got five first down interceptions. Three are in the end zone, and three of the interceptions are in the opponent's front of their 20-yard line. So these are things that got to get cleaned up for Derek Carr, who can turn it around and get the season going. Statistically, when it comes to completion percentage and yards, Derek is right there at the top. But when it comes to interceptions and mistakes, he's got to play better, especially in games coming forward. Derek talked about the critical interception in Los Angeles when Melvin Ingram got him.
It's tough. I wasn't trying to force it or anything like that. I saw our guy win. I was trying to throw it on the back line to him, but they made a play. That was the one that I wish I had back today. But besides that, I felt we did some good things. A lot of things to work on, but obviously those stink.
Yeah, and they do. And when you make mistakes like that, it takes you out of ball games. You know, Marshawn Lynch, a lot of debate this week. A lot of debate on Lynch getting the ball on the one-yard line, which I think he should because he's one of the best, hardest power running backs in football. But John Gruden doubled down, and he said he's going to continue to call plays like that. He has confidence in Carr. He has confidence in these receivers to get open, and he's going to make big plays and big decisions throughout the course of the year. But for Coach Gruden, that was a mistake that Carr has got to fix going forward.
We haven't thrown the ball in a goal-to-goal situation all year. It's first and goal. Decision there is to throw it. It's not open. You throw it away. It just didn't work out. You know, we expected to have a wide-open receiver on the play, and obviously that'll be second-guessed, rightfully so. But shouldn't have made that throw down there. I'll live to hand the ball off on the next play, possibly.
So what's the big takeaway from the loss to the Chargers? It's a division game on the road. The Raiders did not play well. I was very surprised by their lack of energy. They didn't huddle up quickly. There was no sense of urgency with the clock. And I think Derek Carr's got to own that. He's the commander on the field. He's got to know down and distance. He's got to see the play clock. He's got to huddle them up quicker. If it's no huddle, they got to get the play in quicker and run it. And Derek Carr has got to gain control of this team and this offense as he's the leader. He's the captain of the team, and I think he'll be able to do that. When you look at the offensive line, they got to get healthy, and they got to make sure that they get the best out of these rookie tackles, as we've talked about. And the defense, as John Gruden talked about, the field position battle is killing the Raiders this year in regards to where they start with the ball. And the turnovers, something that John Gruden is preaching heading over to London.
Two turnovers hurt us today. We had one at midfield, one at the one-yard line. And defensively, we've got to get off the field. We've got to get off the field and try to get some better field position somehow, some way.
You've heard it all year. Field position, turnovers, playing better, and tackling. The tackling has got to be better here. There are players on this defense have got to do a better job of keeping opponents in front of them, wrapping and gang tackling, something we didn't see in Los Angeles against the Chargers. Quickly, on Seattle, very impressed with what they're doing. Sean McVay had a gutty call for the Rams on a 4th-and-1 with 1:38 to go, which was the key in that victory for the Rams. In that game, Russell Wilson, 3 touchdowns. He's got 10 on the year with only 3 interceptions. And their running game was really strong. They ran it for 190 yards against the Rams. So that offensive line is vastly improved. Chris Carson had 116 yards. Mike Davis had 12 attempts for 68 yards and a touchdown, and they have a vastly improved offensive line. Much better, much more physical. And I watched that game and went back, and what I saw was an offensive line that was pushing the Rams' defensive line around, and that is tough to see. Tyler Lockett is their top receiver with 20 receptions for 347 yards and 4 touchdowns. No Earl Thomas. With the leg injury, one of their best players is gone for the year, but they still have one of the best linebackers in all of football in Bobby Wagner. He is the heart and soul of that team. Seattle's pass defense is 9th in the league at 226 yards a game. But this game's going to come down to rushing defense. Remember, we talked last week about tackling the screen pass and what they had to do to get to Melvin Gordon, and they didn't do it, and they lost the game significantly. Remember this stat going into this game against Seattle in London. Oakland is 28th overall, giving up 127 rushing yards a game, and Seattle is 29th at 129 rushing yards a game. Both teams struggle stopping the run. The Raiders have to do a better job than the Seahawks if they're going to come out of there with a win. Our first guest on the Game Plan podcast is one of the more elite voices in the NFL for well over 2 decades. John Clayton, formerly of ESPN, now has his new venture, and we welcome him to the Game Plan podcast. John, thanks a lot for coming on. Really appreciate it. And congratulations on the new site and the new business model.
Oh, thanks. I mean, it's just so much fun getting a chance now. We have claytonfootball.com, and we're trying to get the news that everybody can use, trying to hit the stuff as far as transactions, all the trends, all the injuries, gets into fantasy, a little bit of gambling, all those different things. And hopefully as everybody gets into it, we'll continue to grow. So I'm really looking forward to love working with the people that we have. David Chalgas, the injuries. We have a lot of stuff going on with all the salary cap stuff and contract. That's Joel Corey is going to be there. Bill Williamson is going to be there. And so we've got Matt Williamson, former scout of the Steelers, who gives you his eyes, but also his fantasy looks. And so got a lot of fun. Hope it's off to a good start. It's been a week.
Excellent. John, a lot's changed since I saw you on the sidelines for the Seahawks and the Raiders, the last game of the preseason. Assess first the Seahawks, who were close to beating the Rams. Final was 33-31. What did the Seahawks do well in that game?
Biggest thing they did, and a twofold thing, they're starting to run the ball. I mean, you're talking about for 2 years one of the worst running offenses in football, a team that's only able to get like 403, 408 carries in the last 2 years, and they start off the season slow, only having 37 running plays. Well, in the last 3 weeks, and I think it coincides with the return of DJ Fluker. Fluker missed the first 2 games with a hamstring injury. Fluker has just been overpowering on the run, and now they're starting to get some good continuity. J.R. Sweezy, who used to be on this team, went to Tampa Bay in free agency and then came back, has come over at left guard. And all of a sudden, a line that has been pretty bad for 2 years is starting to get good. I mean, they've now taken the position where they had 190 yards rushing yesterday against the Ram team, and there was one play where DJ Fluker pancaked Ndamukong Suh. Now, it was a good battle all day between Suh and DJ Fluker, but now this team doesn't back down from those type of fights. So they get 190 yards rushing, even though Russell Wilson didn't even have an attempt. That's the encouraging part. And then on defense, you know, certainly you're going to give up yards and plays because the Rams' offense is so good, but with all the turnover they have, going from 8 Pro Bowl players on defense as starters down to 1, they'll get a second one back when K.J. Wright gets a chance to play. But, you know, they're starting to make progress there, and a lot of it has to do in the secondary. Trey Flowers, a rookie, fifth-round pick, has been phenomenal. Yesterday, he didn't even allow a pass completion. Shaquille Griffin on the other side is doing well. And they were able to take Tedrick Thompson now to replace Earl Thomas. Didn't do a bad job yesterday. So they're making some progress. It's still a work in progress, but they're starting to feel like they might be okay.
John Clayton's our guest. John, I want to ask about the offensive line and the focus to improve it after the last couple of years with injuries, players just not living up to the hype. How big of a priority was that for ownership and obviously the executives who built this team to make sure they get Russell Wilson better protection? Because sometimes I watch the Seahawks and he's still running for his life. He can make big plays outside the pocket.
Yeah, no, it was the biggest priority. And that was the weird part about the first two games. And again, it can't just be DJ Fluker not in there, but they were passing the ball too much and, again, not running it. I mean, that opening game against Denver, they only had 14 running back carries, which is way too little, particularly when you're trying to do something. And, you know, they just didn't have any confidence. I mean, you can see there was a lot of strain. And then Brian Schottenheimer taking a lot of criticism. But what's happened now in the last 3 weeks, and it's funny because Schottenheimer is still taking criticism because now they're saying he's too conservative. But it's a matter, hey, you got to walk before you can run. And so they're starting to establish where that line can be. And what they found out is that what you can now power drive. Because remember, their big switch was going from Tom Cable, who ran the outside zone plays, over to Mike Solari, who does a lot of different things, but it's more angle-type based. It's more try to physically pound you type of blocking, and that's what he does, and that's what's now starting to go in there. And they're starting to develop a personality. It's, you know, getting to be similar to where they were as far as the personality back when Marshawn Lynch was a running back before he had to retire. And that's the plan, and that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to be a running team.
John Clayton is our guest as we game plan for the Raiders and the Seahawks Sunday at Wembley in London. The Raiders, obviously a big disappointment so far, 1-4 to start the year. What do you sense is happening with this organization and this team as they're trying to get John Gruden and Derek Carr on the same page?
Yeah, I mean, it just seems as though that they're taking more of a long-term approach as far as trying to get the John Gruden system in there, both on offense and defense. And unfortunately, the defense, I think, has been the biggest disappointment. I still think they're going to be okay with Derek Carr because you know his talent at quarterback, and you know John is a very good play caller. But that, I think that can all work out. But you still worry about the defense because, I mean, you look at all the changes on the defensive line. I mean, how good is the defensive line? Are they good enough in the secondary? I mean, I think they've gotten through some of the things in the early part of the season where they would fade in the second half of games. But still, I think the defense has the biggest worries right now because I still think offensively they can be fine.
John, Derek Carr leading the league in interceptions. There's a lot to that. He wants to be aggressive. From the injury that happened on Christmas Eve in 2016 to all the coaching changes that he's had with offensive coordinators, why do you believe that Gruden and him will get on the same page and this will work?
Well, because, I mean, at least he's a veteran quarterback, and I know that John's not going to be too big with rookie quarterbacks, and I think that Derek is a hard enough worker to be able to turn it around. But you know how John is. By the end of the season, if it's not working out, then there could be change. But I still think that Derek at least throwing the ball and at least now showing that, hey, the injury stuff from last year may not be with him. But you have to make sure that you don't make too many mistakes, because if you make too many mistakes, which right now he's doing, but I think he can fix that up, is that John Gruden's going to change on that because, I mean, he doesn't tolerate mistakes. And that, I think, has to be a concern.
You covered Marshawn Lynch. You know him well up in Seattle where you're based out of. Are you surprised he's running this hard?
I am. Well, I'm not surprised he's running hard. I'm just running that well because, I mean, you kind of wonder at this age, is there still enough burst there? And what you're seeing is there enough burst. I mean, that's his nature. I mean, he just wants to run you over and destroy a linebacker or anybody trying to tackle. That's always been his style. But to see that the little bit of burst is right there, particularly even more so than last year, I think it's pretty encouraging. And what's amazing is you look and you see, you know, what he was able to do, and he's only getting like about 26 to 28 snaps a game. So when he's in there, he's giving everything and then just trying to bowl people over like he did 4 years ago.
John, as we wrap it up, I think this is a real critical game. I didn't see the Raiders at 1-4 going into London, and I didn't see the Seahawks at 2-3. If the Seattle Seahawks win this game to get back to 500, I don't think they're going to catch the Rams, but they're in play for a wild card early. And for the Raiders, they have games after this, and if they can get a win with Indy and the Niners coming up after that in a bye week, I think John Gruden can get his team to believe that they can get on a bit of a roll. Assess the importance of this game for both franchises.
Yeah, it's vital because, again, more so for the Raiders than it is the Seahawks. Now, again, the Seahawks can't afford to go 2-4. I mean, they need to win, but at least they've been able to taste victory. They had the two games where they won. May not have been pretty, but they got the wins, and they know they can do it, and they know they're in every game. For the Raiders, they still have to learn how to win. I think that's one of the big problems right now because, I mean, you can see they're good enough. It's almost like watching the Cleveland Browns for a while because, you know, Cleveland would be leading in the first half, doing some good things, and then in the second half not know what to do to be able to put the game away or to be able to win. I mean, so they've only got the one win, but it's like they've got to find a way to at least learn how to win and carry that over.
Can't say that I have. You know, I just love the Raider fans. Wish we gave them a better show today. I'm disappointed, very disappointed.
Welcome back to The Game Plan as we get you ready for the Seahawks and the Raiders coming up this Sunday at Wembley in London. One of the great receivers of all time, Hall of Famer Fred Biletnikoff, kind enough to join us before his trip to London. Fred, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, JT. I love it every time I get a chance to spend some time on a radio with you.
Thank you. 26-10, the Raiders lose this past Sunday to the Chargers. And I want to start with your expertise as a former receiver coach and as a receiver with Amari Cooper. He had one target, one reception for 10 yards, Fred, and it seems like the inconsistency seems to be the big story with this young player. What do the Raiders need to do to get him open at the line of scrimmage and get him more catches?
Well, it's always been my way of thinking that if you get guys involved early as you can and keep going to them, they get more comfortable and play a lot better. And it just seems to me with Amari that he's a type of receiver, as long as you keep him involved and keep his attention going all the time, that he gets better and better. And then that's how eventually, you know, you get away from making mistakes and dropping balls and being able to get downfield from different kinds of coverages. And so I really think that it's just a matter of keeping him totally involved and keep his mind thinking receiver-wise.
Yeah, let's stay on that, because as a receiver coach, when you had Rice and Brown and Porter in that receiver room, not every player was going to have a great game every Sunday and have the stats. What did you do as a coach to engage the players that didn't get targets 1 week to keep them motivated heading through practice?
Well, you know, I was pretty fortunate with, you know, having those guys from the standpoint that each one of them knew that. You know, they knew that they couldn't be the main guy every week, but they were going to be able to contribute during the game. So those three guys, the way they played and as professional as they are, they kept themselves in the game no matter what. You know, and at times there was some frustration, but they knew it. You know, they knew exactly what was going to happen during the game, and you better just keep going and playing and playing. And fortunately enough, you know, each one of those guys was able to do that and keep themselves in the game because they were true professionals. You know, they didn't let their minds wander or get disenchanted during the game or on the sideline or whatever. Because somewhere along the line, they're going to be called on to perform. And fortunately enough, you know, those three guys always popped up. You know, Timmy might be catching 6, 7, 8 balls. Jerry might be catching 4 or 5 or 6 here and there. And then other Jerry, you know, he might be catching 1 or 2, but somewhere during that game, they're going to get another couple, 2 or 3 thrown to him, and they kept themselves prepared. Fred, they were very professional about that.
Fred Biletnikoff joins us. I also want to talk with you about getting open and getting off blocks at the line of scrimmage. Amari is a really physical player and can get open downfield, but I think he should be utilized more across the middle of the field or in motion, getting off that corner right out of the gate. What would you recommend? You've worked with John Gruden in the past. We know what a great play caller he is on trying to get Amari off the line of scrimmage, Fred, cleaner at the start of some of these games.
Well, you know, one of the first things that you teach guys, number one, when defensive backs are playing you up at the line, on top of you at the line of scrimmage and bump and run coverage or press coverage, whatever you want to call it, you know, you have to really think beyond them, think down the field. You know, once you start thinking right in front of you, that's one of the problems that everybody has getting off the line of scrimmage. But your thoughts have to be, how can I get down the field behind this guy? And that's what gets you up the field. You know, when you start thinking about getting up the field, then you get it in your mind that what's in front of you isn't your priority. The priority is getting up the field behind that guy and thinking deep all the time. Not, you might not be running deep, but your thoughts and your presentation at the field, when you're releasing up the field, is having that convincing run about you going down the field of going deep all the time. And, you know, that's what your presentation at the line of scrimmage has to be. Because if you're thinking right in front of you, your thoughts about getting down the field never even come into your mind. You're so worried about just getting off the line of scrimmage. And, you know, Amari was, even in college, was always caught a lot of crossing routes, and it seemed that he looked very comfortable doing that. And even though it's a different scenario now, Seth is the one running across the field, mm-hmm. and catching those kind of balls, which Amari can very easily. And maybe Amari does belong inside a little bit more, and because of his size and his quickness. And I mean, the guy has a lot of great technique, you know, with footwork and getting down, getting off the line of scrimmage. He just has to apply it and learn how to apply it and not let that be a stumbling block for him at the line of scrimmage.
Hall of Famer Fred Biletnikoff is our guest. Fred, the principles of John Gruden's offense, and I know you've been to some practices, you know John well, and the times you have to really focus in during the game, with Coach Gruden's fullback and the fact that he's got Marshawn Lynch, he wants to run it in a two tight end set, and then he's got Martavis Bryant, who had 91 yards on 3 receptions in this last game, Jalen Richard. We'll get to Jordy Nelson in a second. Has it changed much since you were a coach with John Gruden to what it looks like he's trying to do now?
Not really, but John found a way to utilize the guys that we had,
right?
And he used them according to what the quarterback could do, and luckily with Rich Gannon was perfect for John's offense, you know, because you know Rich was knew how to read the field, knew with the protections, how to get that offensive line in the backs into the protections, learning the sight adjustments on routes by the receivers. But, you know, John's offense is a good offense because, you know, it goes in spurts. It goes like with Jared Cook, you know, all of a sudden he pops up, and then Amari will pop up, Seth Roberts will pop up, and, these guys all, it doesn't go with the whole length of the game, but it goes in spurts. And that's what you have to be prepared for when you're playing John's offense.
Jordy Nelson, Fred, take us back. He's 33. He's in his 11th season. Take me back to your stage in your career at that time, after the success you had early, all the big games you played in, when you were in your 11th season and had to make adjustments. I'm sure that's something that Jordy Nelson's going through at this stage, coming from Aaron Rodgers now over to Derek Carr, getting a little up there in age, and how he makes adjustments to get open and make big plays.
Well, you know, Jordy's smart enough, and, you know, watching him, you know, he's an excellent route runner, you know, has great footwork, everything. And, you know, when you do start getting up in age, you know, you don't let the age get into your mind. What you do is you just keep that good base of fundamentals, and that's what keeps you continuing to play at a high level. And Jordy's the type of player that he knows how to beat guys. He knows what the coverages are. He doesn't have any problem being tough, beating people at the line of scrimmage, getting downfield. But he just keeps at it and at it and at it, and that's what he works on. And as long as you keep working on that, you know, and you know, you try to keep him in the mode of running the routes that he is best at, you know. And every once in a while, it's going to pop up where, you know, you get that one route that you don't run very much, or you're just maybe good enough at it. But he runs a lot of great routes, and you know, it's got to be exploited more with him and get him involved in a game, because, you know, people talk about when you get old, but it seems that, you know, older guys seem to pull stuff out during a ball game or a play during a game or in a game that you catch people off guard and you surprise everybody.
Freddie, let's wrap up the offense with Derek Carr and the year he's having so far. He's fourth in passing yards with over 1,600 yards, but he leads the league with 8 interceptions. Clearly, he's pressing a bit. It's a brand-new offense again for him. You've seen all the turnover and the head coaches and offensive coordinators that he's had since he's come into the league. What type of advice could you give to him to slow down the game? Interceptions are going to come. He likes to attack. But should he be attacking more on first down? Do you think he's pressing too much in the red zone? What are you seeing with your eyes with Derek Carr?
Well, I think the same thing with him. You know, get him involved with the guys he feels comfortable throwing the ball to, and get all those guys involved with him. And there's just at times I see just a little hesitation, maybe, you know, a bad decision. It's just like a beat. You know, it's like you go 1,001 and there's a mistake. The opening goes by you. Mm-hmm. You know, things are there. The anticipation has to be really at a high level with him. And he's just got to make sure that he's getting involved with the guys that he feels comfortable with out there on the field, and just not throwing the ball to somebody that's not going to perform. And I always look at it, you know, like with Derek, and I don't know how the receivers are from the standpoint that, you know, it's like, you know, in baseball, you know, that pitcher might not be doing very well for the first inning or so the whole team's got to play defense. They got to help the pitcher out. Well, I believe that's what happens with Derek a lot of times. You know, you got to get him back on track, and, you know, you may have to pull a great catch or come down and make something happen that he gets back and feels comfortable with, where it's not you're always trying to get him warmed up with an easy throw. You know, just make sure that those guys understand that, you know, you got to get the quarterback going too.
I love the way you interact with fans at all your signings and personal appearances. And you got a big one Friday, October 12th, the Silver and Black UK chapter, our good friend Keith Smith, Crusader Raider. When I first met him, he just had this energy like I've never seen. And he waits every 4 years, Fred, for these parties. And they really know how to throw a great Raiders party, a Raiders weekend there coming up in London.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I've been over there to Keith's parties. Yeah. I'll tell you what, he puts on a hell of a show. I'll tell you what, he is so into being part of the Raiders and supporting the Raiders and having his group over in London, and then making sure that people that are traveling from Oakland with the, you know, for the Raiders over to London, that they all get involved with him, and he goes out of his way to make everybody feel comfortable and at home. Keith is a trip. He is where he gets his energy. I have no idea, but he does a great job. If you're around there at the places where he's going to be performing, please go, because you'll have a great time.
You know, Fred, I want to wrap it up with that, because the Raider Nation is a family, and I think Keith is like a lot of Raider fans in Oakland and Southern California and the global fans, that if you need a place to stay, if you want to get together for a lunch, if you're in town just for a few hours, or it's game day, this community of fans and what's going on in London again. When we were there a number of years ago, I looked behind me at Wembley, and it was a sea of silver and black, and it looks like it's going to be that way again. And I'm telling you, it's 3 or 4 days of Raider parties there, and everybody feels at home on the other side.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you what. You know what? If you're right. If you want to feel welcome with all Raider fans, you know, no matter where you go, but, you know, having to make a trip like that over to London, you want to know that there's people over there that you know and you feel comfortable around, and that's what Keith does. I mean, he makes you feel at home, and whatever you need, whatever you can do, he's available to help anybody out. Believe me, I'll tell you what, he's a great guy.
Yeah, it's a great family, and it's great that you're involved with this again. Freddie, safe travels. I think if the Raiders can win this game, and Seattle has been struggling, they're trying to win games also. If the Raiders can win this with Indianapolis, the Niners without Garoppolo, it could really turn the season around. Critical game in London against the Seahawks on Sunday. You'll be there. Can't wait to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Okay, you take care, JT.
I hope you can tell that how our team has grown. The last 3 weeks has been really an extraordinary step forward for us, and we're jacked about, here we go. There's a long season ahead of us, and how we come out of this game and go to the next one, it will be crucial, just as it will be the next week. But there's no doubting who we are as a team and how we're trying to build this thing.
Great that we can catch up with Freddie Biletnikoff again. His wife, Angela, they both mean the world to me. I've emceed his Hall of Fame golf tournament for over 15 years as we raise money for Tracy's Place of Hope and the Biletnikoff Foundation. The Biletnikoffs are Raider royalty and ambassadors as they head off to London. Our final guest on the Game Plan podcast is one of the great voices in Seattle sports talk, Dave Softy Maller from KJR in Seattle. Softy, let's get right to it. Rams beat your Hawks 33-31. They're making Sean McVay out to be a hero on that fourth down call late in the game. Take us through that.
Yeah, well, it's really frustrating, I think, for Seahawks fans, JT. And first of all, good to hear your voice. Second of all, thanks for having me on. Number three, going back to that fourth and one, Johnny Hecker was on the field. The Rams were punting the ball with about $1:39 to go in the game. I assume they would have let the play clock run down to around a minute or so, and Hecker gets the ball off, or he takes a delay. And the Seahawks, no matter what you can do with the clock, are getting the ball back. And the Seahawks called timeout. They called timeout apparently before the measurement to save the 30 seconds or the 40 seconds. They rather would have had the 40 seconds than the timeout in their back pocket. And the Rams think about it, and they put Jared Goff out there, and the Seahawks are not in the proper alignment or don't have the right personnel out there on the fourth and one play on the defensive line. And Goff gets the conversion easily. So, yeah, I think most Seahawks fans, JT, when they saw Johnny Hecker coming out there, who's from this area, by the way, he's a native of Seattle, when he came out there for the punt, I think all of us thought, all right, these guys are getting the ball back, and they're going to give Steve Bass a chance to win the game. Didn't happen because the Hawks called timeout. Rams changed their mind. Goff got the first down. Rams win the game.
Is it fair to say that Seattle is much better now on the offensive line? A lot of talk about the physicality in that game. You know, Tom Cable now with John Gruden and the Raiders. How has this offensive line improved over the last couple of weeks?
Exponentially. Mike Solari has been doing a phenomenal job with the guys up front. He brought over DJ Fluker, who he had with the Giants a year ago in New York. And all we knew about DJ Fluker is he was a gigantic person. And he is a gigantic person, but he's a hell of a run blocker. He's a road grader, JT. His pass blocking skills aren't up to par, but for as much as the Seahawks plan on running the ball the rest of the way, that might be okay. And look, there's a silver lining going on here because J.R. Sweezy got released by Tampa Bay a couple weeks into training camp. He was with the Seahawks when they won the championship in 2013, of course, and they brought him back. And he's starting at left guard. And he's starting at left guard for the first time in his freaking career, for God's sakes. He's never played left guard ever in the NFL. And I assume has never played left guard in college because the guy was a defensive tackle at NC State in college. And by the way, the irony on this whole thing is not lost on me because Tom Cable, who's now with you guys in Oakland, was being ripped apart by Seahawks fans for being a terrible offensive line coach. Now Mike Solari shows up. Well, the one guy that Tom Cable identified in school when he was playing defense as a potential offensive lineman in the NFL was J.R. Sweezy. J.R. Sweezy's playing offensive line because of Tom Cable. And J.R. Sweezy starting at left guard has been a gigantic boon for this offensive line. So you have to give Tom Cable some credit for that. But look, man, as long as the Hawks stick with the run, which they did not do in the first couple games of the year, they might have a chance to be a playoff team. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah, I'm looking at this offense, 190 yards on the ground. Carson had 116. Tell us more about Mike Davis, 12 for 68 and a touchdown here. We're talking about guys who are running and getting through some big holes.
Well, they're running hard, they're running through people, and they're taking advantage of big lanes. I think, to me, it starts with those guys up front. I don't want to take anything away from Chris Carson or Mike Davis, but the fact that two guys are doing it and not just one shows me it's about the offensive line. Mike Davis was the starting running back at the end of last year, came over from San Francisco, JT, didn't really do a lot, and then all of a sudden they draft Rashad Penny. Chris Carson moves past Mike Davis on the depth chart, And all of a sudden, Mike Davis says, oh, look at this. Now I'm getting pushed out of a job potentially. I better get off my ass and start working my butt off on game day and start picking up some yards and showing these guys I deserve a roster spot. He's responded so well to the drafting of Rashad Penny and Chris Carson passing him up on the depth chart. He's running like a different running back than the guy that we saw a year ago. Here's the thing, though, man. The Seahawks in the first couple games of the year totally forgot about the run. They go to Denver, they lose a close game. Go to Chicago, lose a close game. They barely run the ball at all in those two games, and it still is frustrating as hell because every move they made over the offseason was about getting back to being a dominant running team. They draft a running back in the first round. They draft a run-blocking tight end in Will Disley. They sign a run-blocking tight end in Ed Dixon. They go out and they pick up DJ Fluker, a run-grading offensive guard in free agency. And then all of a sudden, they forget about the plan, and they start throwing the ball 35 times a game, and they lose two games. So if they would have run the ball like this in the first couple games of the year against what I think are two not very good football teams, there's no reason why this team could not be 3-2 and maybe even 4-1.
Dave Softy Maller joins us, and this is why I wanted to have you on this week, because as you know, the Raiders had leads in four of their five games, and they're looking at 1-4 in John Gruden's first year. Derek Carr's fifth in the league in passing yards with 1,641, but he's got eight interceptions. We know this isn't the Legion of Boom, and unfortunately, that devastating injury to Earl Thomas. Talk about the back end of this defense and what Carr needs to worry about overall for the Raiders.
Well, they play physical football. I mean, that hasn't changed. As long as Pete Carroll is going to be here, they're going to play physical. Bradley McDougal is now your starting strong safety in place of Cam Chancellor. And Tedrick Thompson, the second-year player from Colorado, is now starting in Earl Thomas's spot. And like you would expect, JT, out of a second-year guy, at times he looks okay, and at times he looks awful. I mean, the end of the first half on Sunday and the end of the second half on Sunday, I thought Tedrick Thompson showed his potential. He literally knocked Brandon Cooks out of the game at the end of the first half on Sunday, picks off Jared Goff on a Hail Mary, and then that fourth down play you talked about when they got the conversion to win the game, the third and one, he steps up in the A gap and blows up Todd Gurley and completely explodes him on the line of scrimmage, and they have no choice but to go for it at that point on fourth and one. So Tedrick Thompson, number 33, is obviously a thumper. He's missing some of the smarts and the intelligence that Earl Thomas had. Does not have his speed. There's no question about that. Justin Coleman and Shaq Griffin at the quarterback spots are okay. They're not Richard Sherman or Brandon Browner, but they're getting there. I'm actually pretty damn pleased, to be honest with you, JT, with where the secondary is at, considering how much they lost over the offseason.
Bobby Wagner is one of the best Seahawks I've seen, because when he came into the league, people were wondering what type of player he would be, and then he established himself as one of the most versatile linebackers out there. Where is he in his career? And when we hear about great players, defensive players, wanting to leave the Seahawks or not happy with their contract status, why is he happy, or is he?
Well, he's got a couple years left on his deal, so he's not yet to that bitching stage yet. We'll see what happens when we get to a year or two from now and he starts to complain about getting his deal done. I mean, K.J. Wright, for example, his running mate, who I'm not even sure if he's going to play in this game on Sunday. Arcavius Mingo, by the way, that bust from the 2013 draft from LSU, actually started the game next to Bobby Wagner on Sunday and actually played pretty good. So I think right now, Arcavius Mingo is your complement to Bobby Wagner. I'm not even sure if K.J. plays on Sunday, to be honest with you. But Bobby Wagner is the best middle linebacker in the NFL. Bobby Wagner right now is the brains of that defense. No Earl Thomas, no Cliff Averill, no Michael Bennett, no Richard Sherman, no Cam Chancellor, and my God, is that a lot. Bobby Wagner is now the star. He's the leader. He's the DNA. He's the brain center of that defense. Without him, they're a totally different defense. Go back and look at what happened against Dallas versus what happened against Chicago and Denver for all your proof you need.
What did you think of when the Raiders didn't give the ball to Marshawn Lynch on the goal line? You suffered
that. Hilarious.
That.
I mean, Derek Carr was running his mouth about, you know, I would never do that if I were in that position. You guys remember that a couple years ago when Derek Carr said, if I have Marshawn Lynch on the one-yard line, he's getting the ball. Well, look, clearly there are situations where quarterbacks throw the ball from the one because the team's expecting run. And obviously in the Super Bowl, they should have done that. They should have given the ball to Marshawn Lynch. I don't give a damn if the Patriots know what's coming or if the Seahawks know the Patriots know what's coming. I'm running Marshawn Lynch. But that was 4 years ago. That was a 27, 28-year-old Marshawn Lynch compared to the guy that you guys have now in Oakland. So, look, I get it. I just find it funny that Derek Carr criticized that whole thing and said only an idiot basically would do that, and then he's doing the same thing on Sunday.
This game means everything for both teams, and I'll tell you why. For the Raiders, again, I know they're better than their record, but you are your record at this point, and they're coming off their worst game of the year. They get to be the home team in London. If they win, they have a bye week, and then the Colts and the Niners without Jimmy Garoppolo, and it really looks like the Raiders can at least get the season back on track. For the Hawks, you know, good team, been around for a while at an elite level. I would think, would you agree this is a make or break game if the Seahawks, trailing the Rams already, are going to be a contender for the wild card?
Well, they're four games out in the division right now with the tiebreaker. They're three games out in the standings, and the Rams have the tiebreaker right now. So you're four games out with 11 games to go. I've been saying on my show all year long, there's no way the Hawks can win the West. Zero. Now, can they be a wild card team? Maybe. And right now you got six or seven teams, including Tampa in the sixth spot right now, that are all separated by a half a game or a game. So they're all globbed up right there. The Hawks have games coming up against Green Bay. They play Minnesota. They play the Lions at Ford Field in 2 weeks from Sunday. They got some huge games, JT, on their schedule against teams that are right there in the wild card race. But I totally agree from a Seahawks perspective. I can't talk about it from a Raider perspective. You can more than I can. But if the Seahawks are legit, if you want to take a moral victory and a silver lining from the Ram game on Sunday, you had the lead in that game 24-17 in the third quarter. You were about to get the ball back and maybe have a shot at a game-winning field goal. You put up 31 points on a Rams defense that might be one of the best in the NFL. If you want to take silver linings and moral victories from that thing on Sunday, then you better damn well go back and back it up with a win against the Raiders in London on Sunday. If they lose this game on Sunday, I think a lot of people will feel like, they are what we thought they were. They're not a very good team. They're a 7-9, maybe 8-8 football team at best. You want to go 9-7? You want to go 10-6? Win the damn Raider game.
I'll leave you on this, and I'd like your comment on Pete Carroll and John Gruden. I'm fascinated by this topic because I'm a big John Gruden guy, and I think coming back to the league on his terms with a Super Bowl ring already, if he wins another one, you're talking about with his win percentage, what he has accomplished, he's in the conversation for the Hall of Fame, and the same thing with Pete Carroll. I remember when Pete Carroll was coach in New England. I remember those years before he got to the Seahawks and he was with USC. No one respected him as an elite NFL coach, and now he's a borderline Hall of Famer. Can you make a comparison to Pete Carroll and Gruden from a media perspective?
Well, the only comparison I would make to both of them is they I think, appreciate the press. I think they're smart with the media. And it's funny because I think Gruden got that from Holmgren, by the way. Mike Holmgren does a show with us every Thursday. John's been on our show a couple times, as you know, with Mike when he was, you know, doing TV. And I think both those guys kind of, you know, have kind of played the media a little bit to kind of maybe get a break when they need one or get a break when they don't deserve one. I mean, look, dude, Pete Carroll went to the playoffs 6 out of 7 years, 5 years in a row, went to back-to-back Super Bowls and got a championship and ended the drought going back to the damn Sonics in 79. He's earned a lot of slack in Seattle, and I think he should earn a lot of slack. He deserves a shot, as does Don Snyder, to retool this thing, restart it, you know, work it back from the ground up and try to recreate the magic they had when they showed up here in 2010. But I just think, you know, look, the guy's 67 years old, John. How far does he want to go with this? I mean, he's 67. He acts like he's 45, for God's sakes. I think Pete Carroll would coach as long as the Seahawks would let him. But the window to rebuild this thing is, I think, decent for Pete Carroll. It's not forever. That's why this is a big damn year for him.
Fantastic analysis, as always. Be good, my friend. I'll see you soon.
See ya.
There he is, Dave Softy Mallard, joining us from KJR in Seattle, one of the best sports talk hosts in the country, and that is a fabulous five-star analysis of the Seahawks, who the Raiders play this Sunday at Wembley in London. Perfect way to wrap up the podcast. This was a fun one with Fred Biletnikoff. Wow, what Freddie had to say about Amari Cooper and getting him open, and obviously the great John Clayton, one of my favorite NFL voices, NFL content providers out there. Unique week for us as we had to try to get all these guests who are on their way overseas to all lock them in. Again, Fred Biletnikoff's got several appearances in London. If you're listening and downloading the podcast at Raiders.com or on iTunes, try to track down Freddie B, have a beverage with him, get an autograph, and turn this season around. Look, I said it on Twitter at JT the Brick. I'll say it again. Are you with me? This is the moment right here for the season, back up against the wall. If the Raiders can beat Seattle, then they have a bye week with Indy at home, at the 49ers without Jimmy Garoppolo, the Chargers at home before at Arizona. This is the moment. I'm not a prognosticator. I don't get paid to pick games. We just run a fast-paced podcast. But if the Raiders are going to save the season and turn it around, it must start in London. Home game, a sea of silver and black, coming off their worst game of the year against the Chargers and Carson, to flip it and play a great game against the Seahawks, who've got to be beat up after that physical game with the Rams. It's a tough flight for both teams, but hopefully John Gruden and his staff, they have the Raiders ready to play to get a win heading into the bye week, and we'll have more great things to talk about. For everyone at Silver and Black Productions, I'm JT. If you're going to London, have a safe trip. We'll see you back after the bye week.
Thank you for listening to The Game Plan on the official Raiders Podcast Network.